With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week, Christian Bale puts on the pounds going through Dick and Thin in his Chaney biopic, and director Adam McKay tells us just what terrible precedents this vice created. Plus, Nicole Kidman plays a Los Angeles detective hunting for an old foe, but will it destroy her? I'm Jake Cunningham, and joining my oval pod booth is Sam Howlett S. Truman.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It goes downhill next.
Okay.
And James K. Powell?
Hello.
It's Kelly Powell's here as well.
Hi.
Credit to you listeners if you got that one. It was James K. Polk. Everyone's favourite president. Yeah, so...
You should have done Colin Powell.
Yeah.
Who is in Vice.
He's in Vice.
Yeah, but that doesn't... That joke doesn't work. He's not an actual president.
Neither's Cheney.
No, but then... Because the first joke that I thought of was Sam Howlett S. Truman. So I thought,
you've got to go with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Once I've settled with that, I've got to go with it. Now we have to be careful because whenever anyone is in this room, everything starts to be recorded. So we must be careful about what we say.
Okay.
We've got Academy Award nominated Adam McKay on the show in a bit, as well as some discussion on Vice, which is now nominated for Best Picture as well. But let's start with Destroyer. And now this is about a kind of grizzled cop played by Nicole Kidman out in LA. She's called Erin Bell. And she goes undercover to infiltrate a gang. Some tragic results come of it. And then a few years down the line, a member of that gang re-emerges and kind of throws a spanner in the work. Now, people that might follow the Shiznit on Twitter, don't know if any either of you do this?
No. I do not, no.
There's a great gallery every year of what the Oscar posters actually mean.
Right.
Like photoshopping.
Oh, I do know what this is, yeah.
That's great.
So, like, the... Star Is Born one is photoshops, so it said, like, should have nominated the Ass Jeans song. And the photoshop for Destroyer is just Nicole Kidman without makeup.
Yeah. And a wig.
But Kelly, is this film maybe a lot more than that?
Yeah, no, it totally is. It is directed by Karen Kusama, who made, what was her last film? Do you know?
The Invitation.
The Invitation,
A film that I love.
Yeah.
I know you're
I like The Invitation, yeah.
Yeah. And didn't she do...
Jennifer's Body?
Jennifer's Body, yeah. Jennifer's. Yeah. She's done a couple, she's an interesting one to sort of follow.
Yeah. I mean, she had a indie darling hit, then she had Aeon Flux, the manga adaptation.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's... like this case of that second film not doing well and then almost having to rebuild.
Well, it's a case of someone getting a big Hollywood movie too quickly into their career. After their breakout first film, they're immediately given the reins to do this huge project, which they haven't built up that skill set yet. Mm. And immediately they're kind of in director prison for a few years until they have to build their way back up.
To her, she's obviously been working on this for ages. Her husband was one of the screenwriters on it, and so I think it was a bit of a passion project for her. And it's a very considered film. I think it's a very complicated narrative, and she handles a lot really well. I think Nicole.
It's a tough ask to bring something new to the LA detective story.
Totally, but she does, you know, she does. And there's been a lot of talk around locations used in the film, locations that people, you know, like directors who've commented on the fact that, like, where are these locations? They really spent a lot of time scouting different versions and perspectives of the LA sort of.
I mean, we don't really think about it. We've probably seen every single location that we think of.
It's true. I mean, you know, overused, but this one really feels very gritty and real. You know, Nicole Kidman does a great job. I think it's you don't see many women in this kind of a role, like the woman in the neo-noir always serves a function, and this one she's sort of, you know, she heralds it. She's the at the forefront of the narrative, and she's super flawed as a human being. You struggle to empathize with her, although you do. I mean, all along the way, it's sort of told in flashbacks, and you kind of have to watch this very closely. I think it needs a second watch once you've seen it to sort of go, okay, you know, because it's a lot of information, but interesting, you know, you kind of at the edge of your seat wanting to know, where's the story going? What is this character? What is going to be the outcome of this character? You know,
and when someone inhabits a character like that, we talk about wanting to kind of wallow in films that have beautiful landscapes or atmospheres. With a character of this depth, sometimes you've got to go revisit it and just see how much they're doing to get inside that person.
Exactly. It's not a pretty film.
No.
Yeah.
And it's not the only film out this week. Of course, the other one and our main focus this week is Adam McKay's Vice. Sam, you were lucky enough to sit down, say it again, with the Academy Award nominated Adam McKay. Tell us a bit about Vice.
So Vice is Adam McKay's follow-up to The Big Short, and it's very much in the same wheelhouse where it is a political satire told in a very kind of very similar in tone and style. You know, it's very energetic, very playful with the form. Breaks the fourth wall a lot. It does a lot of things with editing. But here his focus is on the story of Dick Cheney. So this is very much a biopic. Follows Christian Bale as Dick Cheney, his rise in career through the White House until he became the vice president to George W. Bush, where he's very much seen as this kind of hidden figure, the power behind the throne. But I think this is a lot funnier than The Big Short. It's definitely got more gags, and I was very lucky, as you say, to sit with Adam McKay last week in a hotel in London.
And you also spoke about the film.
That doesn't come up.
Adam McKay, welcome to the Curzon podcast.
It is my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
So we're here to talk about Vice, your Dick Cheney biopic. Can you tell us a bit about what your sort of thoughts and impressions were of Dick Cheney before making this film, and if that changed at all in the process of making the film?
I had a conversation about 4 or 5 years ago with a friend where I was saying, you know, I really believe people are basically good, and that even when people do evil, there's a person under there who's in pain that you can have compassion for, except Dick Cheney. And my friend jokingly said, well, then you have to do a movie about Dick Cheney. And little did I know he would be proven right a couple of years ago when I started reading a book about him and was like, holy moly, this guy changed world history and we don't know that much about him. So what changed was I did find some compassion for him.
Okay.
I did, yeah. And I don't mean I want to give the guy a big hug, but yeah, there's a person there. There's a person there who got tempted by power and it broke apart his family and hundreds of thousands of people died and people were tortured and America changed. Mm. But I did find a human being there and that surprised me. That surprised me. And that was part of the quest of the movie. And sure enough, it was there.
And is this a story you've been wanting to tell for a while? And what was it like? The Big Short, the success of The Big Short gave you the confidence to explore Dick Cheney as a character?
Yeah, we knew, you know, there are not exactly a bunch of studios around Hollywood clamoring for a Dick Cheney movie.
Yeah,
so we definitely knew we were going for it on this one. I mean, he's a pretty uncharismatic guy, pretty unpopular guy.
Yeah.
But we just felt like this story needed to be gotten down. You know, there needed to be a film about it. And there's a mystery there. And in some ways it explains, not entirely, but some parts of how the world became as crazy as it is. And then one of the fortunate, you know, outcomes of it was I got to witness these brilliant performances from these actors who helped solve the mystery of who these people were. So it was quite an experience. It definitely was.
And in, you know, in having Christian Bale as Dick Cheney, can you talk a bit about the process of working with him to create this person? And did you work with him to kind of make sure it wasn't just an impression, it was a fully rounded character we were seeing on screen?
I mean, the reason I started writing the script, I immediately knew that I wanted Christian Bale for precisely that reason, that it wouldn't just be an impression. Yeah. It had to be a psychological impression. It had to be a psychological interpretation of him. So I would go to Christian's house and we would just talk for like 3-4 hours. And I had already done a lot of research. He was starting with his research. And we would just have these long conversations about people like Dick Cheney or how do you become like this? And we would talk about certain segments of his life. And then Christian kind of goes off on his own and he has his own process, and he ends up looking at every single piece of videotape or film you can ever see on him, and every piece of dialogue and every movement, and he becomes like not just an expert on the man Dick Cheney, but an expert on like Dick Cheney's body, like his movements. It's really amazing to see, and this whole group of actors in this movie really worked that way. Amy Adams too. Lynn Cheney, much less footage of her, much harder to get access to what her life's about. And but all these actors did that. They did these incredible deep dives and to make sure that these characters would not be impressions, that they would be flesh and blood.
And in terms of the sort of style of filmmaking you're going for here, it's very similar to The Big Short with this kind of dynamic approach to it, the filming, the editing, and the sort of breaking of the fourth wall. What is it about this style that you feel really works when you're telling these kind of, you know, these heavy political stories?
You know, I think especially with Vice, it could be very easy to fall into the rhythm of a, quote, political biopicture. And that's a very comfortable rhythm that we're all familiar with. Yeah. And I really did not want that to happen. So I wanted the movie to keep the movie. I wanted the movie to keep the audience engaged at all times. Yeah. I wanted the audience to be surprised, on the edge of their seat, curious, maybe sometimes confused, horrified. Because I think part of what's happened with representative government is that we take a lot of it as like boring or we're cynical about it, and we think these decisions don't matter. So I always wanted to have everything to have stakes and. And so, yeah, that's why we chose that style. It's a little bit of a different purpose than why we did it in The Big Short. In The Big Short, we did it because we had to explain. In this case, we did it because we wanted to make sure it was alive.
Okay. And then, so how do you feel that your background in comedy has kind of informed your approach to the subject matter here?
Well, I think because of those... you know, I trained in Chicago with Del Close, who's a famous improv teacher. And the way Del Close taught comedy and that whole school of Chicago improvisation incorporates a lot of different forms of theater. It doesn't necessarily treat comedy as just comedy.
Yeah.
You can do serious things. You can do things that are sad. It's pretty wide. You know, obviously Mike Nichols came out of that background and Elaine May and a lot of really interesting people. So I think the way we used to do long form called The Herald. And within it, you would incorporate a lot of different theater forms. It wasn't just one form. And I think that naturally just bled into my filmmaking, in the sense that why not use other forms? Why not change up forms? People can handle it. Especially depending on whatever story you're going to tell. Sometimes you need to do it. Sometimes you don't. With this movie, it really felt like we needed to put it on edge in some way. So it felt very natural to it.
Do you kind of see this as like another stage in your career, like from The Big Short onwards, because obviously they're so different from what you've done in the past in terms of like feature filmmaking. Do you see this as like a new era for you in a way?
You know, it's just, I think we all go on and we do things we like, and you know, eventually we change a little bit. I think a big thing is just that the world changed so much. It would be very strange to still be doing comedies like I did when I started. It just doesn't feel like those types of comedies would even fit in the world right now. So a part of it's a reaction to the kind of insane world we live in. And then another part of it is just, as you keep making films, you want to try different stuff. I first and foremost, yeah, I love comedies, but I've always just been a fan of all kinds of movies. I grew up watching movies. I always watch movies nonstop. I'm definitely a film geek and a fan first and foremost. So, you know, I'd love to make a horror movie one day. I still want to do a big Marvel movie. There's like lots and lots of different kinds of movies I would still like to make. But right now with where the world's at, these movies feel kind of right.
Yeah. Okay. And you're obviously kind of sort of known for allowing a lot of sort of freedom and improvisation on set of the earlier films. Is that something you've carried on to Vice, or was Vice a bit sort of tighter in terms of the script? And
every actor knows, I always tell them, if something's not comfortable, try it a different way. After we get a take that's good, you know, the circle take, I'll always say, okay, let's mess around with it a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm kind of always rewriting myself, truth be told. So we'll be doing it on set, and there's a lot of conversations where I'll say, is that line any good? It doesn't feel right to me. And the actors will actually go, it seems great to me. And they'll defend the original line, even though it's my line. So yeah, I always like to tinker, kick it, pull it, sometimes outright improvise. But as far as the amount of improv on set, it's nowhere near what we did on the comedies. I mean, I'd say the comedies, we're doing about 11% as much improv as the comedies. Yeah. I mean, we shot over 1 million feet of film on Step Brothers. We improvised a lot.
Yeah, and Anchorman actually has two versions as well.
Exactly. I mean, it was constant improv. So, no, nowhere near as close as that. But I do like to keep that looseness. Yeah. I think it helps actors. I think there still gives room for discovery.
I think you can feel that in the edit as well, because the editing's so kind of non-formal and non-what we've seen before. Are you that sort of, you know, impulsive in the editing room as well?
Well, a lot of that's Hank Corwin, my editor. Yeah. He's got a very unique style. If you've ever seen like Natural Born Killers or Tree of Life, those are Hank Corwin edited films, and he just, there's no one like him. And we sort of had a peanut butter and chocolate moment where we just clicked. I was like, where did you come from?
Yeah.
And we've been having a lot of fun working together. He kind of edits like I filmmake. So, and for these last couple movies, it's just been the perfect style.
And I understand that the election happened while you're in pre-production. Is that right?
We were actually tech scouting the TV show we did, Succession, with Jesse Armstrong, one of your countrymen.
Yeah.
And, and we had a tech scout the next day after he won. I remember people in the crew were like crying. But I was also in the middle of the Chaney script as well.
Yeah.
So there was a moment of like, do you go ahead with this? Is this still the right story to tell? And after a beat, I felt like, yeah, it actually feels like the right story to tell.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did it change anything?
No, no. It was always what it was.
Yeah.
It was always the portrait of Dick Cheney, which was Lynn Cheney. And then also as part of that, the portrait of the Republican Party and the rise of the Republican Party. And it still felt right.
Right. Well, Adam McKay, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for having me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Sam, was it Vice to meet him?
Very Vice. He gave me some good advice.
Oh God, you guys sometimes.
All right. The starting point for this weirdly seems like The Big Short, because this feels like the second part in a new era.
100%, yeah. Whereas, The Big Short's very much trying to capture this moment rather than a character. The Big Short doesn't really have characters as such. I know it does, but it doesn't feel, I can't remember anyone's name in The Big Short, really.
Michael Burry.
You've read the book. Doesn't count.
I have seen the film very recently okay. and read the book. But none of the characters in the film are actually named after anyone in the book.
Right, okay. But like, these aren't, they're not characters that people reference a lot. The Big Short's about...
No one's like, oh, that classic Michael Burry line.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's true.
It's very much about this thing that happened and the people that surrounded this thing, whereas Vice is about all the things that happen around this one person.
Mm.
And whether he creates them or he reacts to them, it's all about him.
Like, he's clearly just latched onto something that he likes doing. I know he weirdly touches on it at the end of The Other Guys as well. Like, he delves into that. They feel like, oh, there was a serious guy under all of these dick jokes.
Yeah.
Strangely, when I was watching it and thinking about recent releases, the film that I kept thinking back to was The House That Jack Built. No, he's almost developing this kind of hyper PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, okay.
It's essayistic, and he takes something that, like with The Big Short, there's a lot of stills, archive, documentary, and then the film itself is shot in a mockumentary style as well. So you really feel like you're constantly getting this almost newsreel footage of a film, and he's approaching Vice in the same way. And you've got this narration by Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
And it feels like this guide. And when it pauses for a still for a moment, it feels like a bit like Ken Burns.
It is, or Michael Moore. It's like, okay, let me explain what this is.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of that.
Yeah. But in the same way, you never know where he's going to take it. Mm. You know, the movie stops halfway through and it starts again.
Yeah.
You know, like, what the hell? I think he's not afraid to play with the audience either, you know. I think it's a nice... I love it when filmmakers don't sort of spoon-feed. And this could be a story to have spoon-fed.
Yeah. I think the hidden superstar of this film is Hank Corwin, the editor, who was the editor on The Big Short.
Yeah.
But he also was... he did assistant work on... or contributing work on Moneyball, which was another Michael Lewis adaptation, which was also the writer of The Big Short. And he's got this really interesting way of interpreting data and kind of bringing in what should be really boring and just giving it real energy. I said about Big Short feeling like newsreel, and I think something that Vice is playing with really interestingly is this idea of newsworthy imagery and our constant consumption of it and the characters that reside within those images. And he recreates news footage with the actors that we are seeing in the film, even though we know what news footage that's coming from. Like, we know that there was the actual George Bush in that image.
Yeah.
But Sam Rockwell's playing it.
Yeah.
It's like this constant circle of reality and deception and the stage of politics all like being this never-ending thing. And even though these performances are quite caricatured, like everyone's super heightened, I think. And that only plays into it. And I know... Yeah. That's a lot of people's negative feelings towards the films. Oh, these people don't feel like real people. But I think that's what it's trying to say about the people that are getting into politics.
Yeah, exactly.
Aren't really real, because what they show, the face they show to the public is a facade.
Mm.
It is like a performance. And it does feel like a staged thing. It is like, okay, well, you know, and you see the two sides of Dick Cheney in this film, which I think is a great thing, because he doesn't shy away of humanizing him at moments, because he is a human. But I think that it makes his decision making and what he does so much worse. You know what I mean? Because he knows there's a consequence to his actions, and he does it anyway. It does kind of feel like a stage. Like, you see him on stage and he's performing and he knows what to say, and you see him at home and he's a different person, you know? I think it's very clever filmmaking.
Yeah. I do love how opinionated this film is as well. It's not trying to walk a line between left and right or whatever. It's McKay's opinions are there on screen for you to see. And it's a scathing attack of Dick Cheney. But it's not saying he's this big evil guy. He's saying this guy's a really terrible person and he, you know, ruined a lot of people's lives because he could.
Yeah, it's not like it's like a supervillain that like the great supervillains we kind of get an entry point into So you think, oh, there are things that have happened to you and you're still terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not just evil for evil's sake. That's pointless. Like, yeah. That'd be no fun to
exactly.
watch that.
Yeah.
But the let's look at the central performance here. Christian Bale.
Yeah.
I think he's terrific.
I think he's... it's pretty good.
Oh, wait. Oh, well, Christian's back.
Well, George, better call an ambulance. I'm having a heart attack.
That was a good gag. Like, that's really one of the great gags, yeah. He manages to sell it somehow as Dick Cheney in 1963 and...
2015.
Mad. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously... huge credits to the makeup team.
Yep.
Sadly, I don't know their names, but they've done a terrific job here.
They're nominated, aren't they?
They must be. Are nominated, it's yeah. fantastic. He does it. Like, it doesn't feel cheap at all.
It doesn't. And it's not just an impression. For all, I mean, let's be honest, Sam Rockwell's just doing a Bush impression here.
Yeah.
He's in like, three or four scenes, and he's there to do a very good, very funny George Bush impression.
Mm.
Christian Bale, although it's a great Dick Cheney impression, that's not all he's doing. This is a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems cliche to say this about Christian Bale now, but he really does just disappear into this role.
Mm. Mm.
I didn't think the words Christian Bale once in this film.
Mm.
I didn't True. Think I was watching a performance at all.
No, yeah. And I think you do think that of the supporting characters.
Yeah.
Because a great supporting actor, the challenge there is within a short window to still give you a window into the life of someone.
Yeah.
I don't think you get that from Rockwell. As you say, it feels like something that we've seen and we're not learning anything new.
I think Carell should have been supporting actor
nomination
over Rockwell, personally. Because he, again, has to do Donald Rumsfeld across 40 years.
And he's 40 decades.
40 decades. Well, it's old man Rumsfeld. Born in 1772. But he's doing something incredible as well, because he's the biggest character in the film.
Mm.
Like,
yeah,
he's huge.
Out there, yeah.
Yeah. He goes through some fantastic eras of glasses.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Glasses
yeah.
and hair. Oh, and his the Carell laugh is great in this film.
It's really good.
We spoke last week about Carell screaming in Beautiful Boy.
Mm-hmm.
This gets good Carell laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just going to divert away there for a moment and just say, people should check out Welcome to Marwen if you can, because it's unlike anything you would have seen for a long, long time.
Steve Carell has had the weirdest year of his life.
Yes.
This month for Carell. Oh, man. To be a member of the Carell fan club right now. What a time to be alive. Something that I would really love to talk about is Nicholas Britell's score.
Mm.
He also did the score for If Beale Street Could Talk, Moonlight, and The Big Short.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Short is a terrific score, and the final track on it is the Big Short Piano Suite. And the first track of Vice almost feels like a continuation of that. He's a fantastic pianist, and you think, like, this score is pretty bombastic at times.
Yeah.
But these moments, because it is such a erratic film in style and performance, and it's so excited all the time, when it does slow down, the fact that you've got this brilliant slow pianist there, I think, is exactly the rhythm that it needs to go by. And you listen to something like Beale Street, which has this great atmosphere to it without ever feeling like you're being dominated at all. And I just think he's a terrific addition, and I'm sure we'll be going on to do a lot more stuff.
It is a great score, yeah.
Sam, you mentioned in the interview with Adam McKay how he likes to improvise with people in the past, and that's something that he's known for from Step Brothers and the other guys, of chucking lines out to comedic actors, and maybe in a serious political drama that spans decades. We don't expect many gags, but that's one of your favourite things about it.
Yeah, what I love about this film, and the reason I think that I prefer it to The Big Short, is that I think this is a lot funnier. I think this is a full-on comedy. And there are gags in this film that are so elaborate and must have been so expensive and time-consuming to set up that do nothing for the story, that are just there to be... I think they're just there to be funny.
Mm.
And I love that you have those moments in a film, a biopic of Dick Cheney. That Adam McKay is having so much fun making this film in the writing, in the production, and in the editing.
Mm.
Like Kelly mentioned it earlier, the fake ending in the middle is so funny, but could completely be cut out and it wouldn't affect the rhythm of the film. It's just a really great gag.
Mm.
And that's what I love. Kind of like how Airplane just is a 90-minute series of gags that don't really connect together in a narrative. It's incredible. And
that's I think that's his challenge here, is that there's not a neat story to Dick Cheney.
Exactly.
There is like his success.
Could you imagine if this story was told one scene after the other, tracking from 1960s to the 2000s, one decade after the other, without any of the narration, without any of the kinetic editing.
And that's why McKay is a great choice for it, because he's doing everything that he can to break up what we know about a biopic structure.
We all know that Cheney becomes vice president. We know that 9/11 happened. We know that he's instrumental in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But in watching Vice, I didn't know it was going to happen in one scene after the other.
Well,
I didn't know when that was going to happen, because I didn't know if he was going to then suddenly jump back to another time. I didn't know if the film was going to restart again. I didn't know if there's going to be another Shakespearean scene.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, God, yeah. I remember that. I forgot about that.
Yeah. We've mentioned a lot of the actors there. Obviously, Bale is the one that most people are talking about.
Yeah.
But Amy Adams is Lynn Cheney, too.
Yeah, she's great. And, you know, I think people are making a lot of like Lady Macbeth comparisons with her. And you do get the feeling that she is another power behind the throne. Mm-hmm. Who's the power behind the throne?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
Well, yeah, because it's only when she scolds him does he go, ah, okay, well, I guess I'll make something of myself.
Mm.
You know, it literally is her influence. And you can tell how much... Well, that's what I mean, you know, the Dick Cheney at home. You can tell that she's the boss at home, you know. And you do get a sense that they love each other and are a power couple, but in a very dangerous way.
Yeah, power being the optimum.
Power, yeah, exactly. But she's great in it, I think. She's also the makeup. Her makeup was incredible.
Yeah.
Just also how they age her.
So subtle.
So subtle.
But convincing.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And she's maybe favourite to win Best Foreign Actress?
Really?
I don't know.
Because Regina King. But Regina King wasn't nominated for the SAG Award.
Oh, that's weird. I watched Beale Street again this weekend.
Did you?
She's
brilliant.
Yeah, she's
so good. All right, and Beale Street we'll be lucky enough to talk about in a few weeks' time.
Yay!
But that's about it on Vice. If you do have any thoughts on the film, please email us. The address is podcast@curzon.com, or you can just tweet us the old-fashioned way, @CurzonCinemas. And if people want to tweet you too, they can do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, where can people find you?
They can find me by going onto Twitter and searching SamHowlett_1.
And Kelly, you're tweeting a lot more.
A lot more. I'm getting on it, guys. KS_Powell.
Yeah, and you two went off and podcasted with someone else.
Yeah, we did. Sorry.
Sorry,
yeah.
Jake. Just cheated on you a little bit.
Yeah.
We got to speak to Kobe, who's been on our podcast before as a contributor. They've got a podcast called Flix Watcher. And we spoke about, in a huge amount of depth, Roma.
Yeah, regular listeners will know that's like one of the best films of the decade.
Yeah,
so, if you want to hear a bit more of Kelly Roma standing, head over to the Flix Watcher pod. If you don't fancy heading to the cinema this week for Destroyer or Vice, you can always watch something at home on Curzon Home Cinema. Let's hand off to our very own home cinema coordinator, Sam Howlett. What can we do if we're sitting on the sofa?
If you're sitting on the sofa, Jake, you should check out Alexandria Bombach's documentary On Her Shoulders, which is about Nadia Murad, who is a 23-year-old Yazidi who survived genocide at the hands of ISIS. And she repeats her story to the world, an ordinary woman thrust onto the international stage as the voice of her people. So do check that out. It's got a very good review in The Guardian.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of the BAFTA-nominated
features. BAFTA-nominated films, Oscar-nominated films, Cold War, which got a lot of surprise nominations at the Oscars. We're all very happy about that. You can check that out on Curzon Home Cinema too.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you so much for listening, everyone. It's been a pleasure to have you with us. It's goodbye from Sam.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Kelly.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from me. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.